This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Hi, this is Dave Musial, owner of Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric. With our biggest sale ever, furnaces from $39 a month, furnace and air conditioning combos from $59 a month, plus 72 months interest-free financing and up to a $4,000 system rebate. Four Seasons guaranteed to beat any competitor's price by up to $1,000 guaranteed. So call today for your free in-home estimate and same-day installation.
For all the right reasons, call 866-4-SEASONS.
Chicago winters can be tough. Snow, ice, and freezing temps make every drive a challenge. If you're thinking it's time for a new Chevy, you're right. Your local Chevy dealer has the perfect vehicle to keep you safe and confident on the road. From heavy-duty performance to everyday versatility, Chevy has you covered. The Silverado offers unmatched power. The Equinox and Blazer provide all-weather confidence. Need room for the whole crew? Check out the Traverse, Tahoe, or Suburban, or go for the sporty, city-friendly tracks, perfect for navigating winter streets. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. That's ChevyDriveChicago.com to explore the latest models, find special offers, locate your nearest dealer, and even start shopping online. Don't let winter slow you down. Find your next Chevy today at ChevyDriveChicago.com. That's ChevyDriveChicago.com.
Obviously, we talked about it yesterday. Pete Alonso was going to speak. He did shortly after we left the airwaves, so we get a chance to react to it now and then spin it forward, of course. And I thought Alonso handled himself pretty well. I wouldn't say he seemed excited or happy, but I think he seems satisfied for the time being, getting paid that $30 million for the first year, and it was going to be the highest for a first baseman in the sport. And my favorite takeaway from it was the fact that he finally acknowledged that his last two seasons weren't good. Remember last year, he was talking about, oh, I'm an all-star and this and that, and I thought he should have said, you know what, Lindor was an all-star, or Nimmo deserved to be an all-star, and Pete was, to me, blindly just building himself up, saying he deserved to be an all-star in a year, which he didn't, but he had a little more self-awareness than normal, and I do think he's on a mission to prove himself. Now we just actually got to go out there and have a vintage, big-time Pete Alonso season.
I think Pete's going to have a good year, and you know how I feel about Pete. I'm not the biggest fan from a baseball perspective. I think he's a good guy. I think he's a good home run hitter, really good, but I think there's a lot of things wrong with his game. But he sounded free yesterday. He sounded loose. He sounded relieved of burden. Now, and we'll get into this in a little bit, there's other burdens that might be coming on the radar soon. Maybe like Vlad Guerrero coming to take his position. We'll get to that in a minute. And also, if he doesn't have a big year, then he's not going to be able to opt out. There's still things that he's got to juggle. Like, it's not completely free, but I think the key, Sal, no matter what you do for a living, no matter what the weakness might be, being honest and acknowledging weaknesses generally is the first step to getting better at it. Honestly, whether it's something with your marriage, whether it's something with a coworker, whether it's something with your children, whatever, I mean, really, applies to every facet of life. If you don't know, even people who know that they need to work on things, if they can't say it out loud and let those words reverberate off the walls for everybody to hear them, I think the path to cleaning things up becomes much more complicated. So I think Pete's ready to roll this year. I really do.
It was one of my big issues with him a year ago when, like, I'd rather have heard from Pete last year saying, I don't deserve to be an all-star this year. I'm going to go and represent the Mets and be happy to do so, but Francisco Lindor should go over me. He didn't do that. So that's why I think that, to your point, that is a big step that we saw from him yesterday, some self-awareness and hey, how could you not? If you're not humbled or be made aware of the reality of your situation after the offseason that he just went through, then there's no hope. Now, so it's good what he said. Now he's got to go out there and actually do it. So there's another part of me that thinks, okay, well, he's coming off of two bad years. I believed last year he was going to have a good year, betting on himself, final year of the, walk year, whatever, final year of his contract, coming off a down year, bounce back. in a big way, and he didn't do that. So now it's another year older, two bad years in a row. So now not only did he have to acknowledge that he hasn't been as good, which he did, he's actually going to go out there and produce. Like, we could say he's going to have a big year.
Yeah.
I said it last year, it didn't work. You say it this year, who knows? Oh, he's in a better lineup. Well, we're going to find out. Pete Alonso's going to be under a lot of pressure this year. He's not playing just for this season, obviously. He doesn't have financial security long-term or a home for the next 5-6 years. He said he wants to be here. The Mets want him to have a good year, just like we did last year. So now is he actually going to go out there and do it? I still have my doubts about Alonso. I think he's in a good place mentally, which is encouraging, but I still have my doubts that he's actually going to go out there and perform.
I really was excited to hear him talk yesterday, and I had to go out to St. John's to do something. So I had a chance to be in the car for a while going across Midtown, and even though traffic was a little bit lighter because of the holiday. So I listened to Evan and Tiki, as they generally would anyway, and they had a chance to play the entire thing. And I heard somebody who's free for now. He even went so deep as, and you and I have criticized this, like, we can't stand the way he throws the baseball.
Right.
Like, when he's trying to turn a 3-6-3 double or plate the plate, it's like it's not a loose, it's just an ugly throw. And he even talked about that. He's like, listen, I went back, I looked at my mistakes, I looked at what I think I need to get better at, and he talked specifically about defense. So, you know, this is a man who, let's put ourselves in Pete's shoes. I know it's easy for, and by the way, I think what we've done has been very fair and very accurate with Pete Alonso. I think you and I have been on that accurate train for really as much as anybody from day one. Never been personal. It's been very, let's lift up the curtain. Who is this guy as a player? And should he get the contract he desires? We're very honest about that. And it's not about us being right. We happen to be right with this. But the other thing, too, when I look at Pete, I do think if I'm him, I'm sitting there saying, I mean, all right, yeah, I can acknowledge I had 80-something ribbies last year. The home runs went down. I can acknowledge I'm not Keith Hernandez with the leather. I can acknowledge, you know, I'm not going to hit 310. I'm never going to be that hitter. But I'm still really, really good. And I'm one of the best players the Mets have ever had as a position player. And I'm beloved by this fan base. So I say all this. Many of us know this. But I do think it's important, at least once in a while, which we've tried to do, put ourselves in his shoes. Nobody wanted you.
Right.
Like, you're 30 years old. You play a position that's kind of, you know, certainly decaying a bit in terms of importance and length and contract and all that stuff. You just gave Juan Soto a gazillion dollars and every concession, whether it's sweets and everything for his family, and you're trying to just carve out a little, you know, 3-4-5 year deal, which he couldn't get. So I don't think that he really thought he was an all-star last year. I just think he couldn't say it. Because I think when you say it, you put it out there, and in his mind, which I also get, complicates the negotiations. Well, people really start jumping. I'm not doing that well. I think that he handled it wrong, but I think right now, I think Pete is really in a good space and ready to go.
Yeah, and the thing that I'm most excited about is that Pete is here for one season.
Yeah.
And that the path to a brighter future has taken another step in the right direction for the Mets. You mentioned it before. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. spoke today. He, in fact, did not. Now, we had this conversation, was it a month ago? Whenever it was a long time ago, trying to do the math about whether or not Guerrero Jr. would be available. And the number one thing was that, and by the way, like, we based it off of the fact that there was a report that the Mets had inquired about Vlad Guerrero Jr. So that is step one, the fact that they were interested. Step two was, well, the Blue Jays are trying to sign him, so who knows if he's going to be available. Okay, but Vlad had the deadline of the first day that the team needed to report to spring training that if he didn't have his extension, he was going to test free agency. Well, today is that day. And Vladimir Guerrero Jr. does not plan to negotiate a potential contract extension in season, paving the way for him to be a free agent, which to me now brings the option of, because of the way that the Pete contract went, the Mets are still obviously in very much in play for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. He's going to hit free agency, which means that Toronto would probably be smart to maybe move him before then. And maybe that can be an addition here. If it's not in season, BT, it'll be in the offseason.
Yep.
But I still firmly believe, like I did a month ago, that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is going to be the Mets' first baseman.
You've been saying it for a while. You could be right. I actually think this lines up perfect for the Mets here, and for some of the reasons that you just laid out. But I'm going to give you a little bit of my own slant. Number one, you know, Pete knows he's got to perform. If he performs, the Mets benefit. Number two, if he doesn't perform, Pete's gone. or at least after next year, which is $24 million, which is fairly cheap.
Yeah, for you have him for DH. Marte's not going to be here. Right-handed DH.
Yeah,
perfect.
Yeah, you lose some other. I believe McNeil's contract would be done at that point. You start to shed some other money. So, you know, you've got a motivated, focused Pete with Soto on base 42, 43% of the time every night in front of him, number one. I think Pete's going to play very well. If he doesn't, that resolves itself. And, oh, yeah, by the way, somebody who you and I both not think, we know, is clearly better than Pete. Not only seems to want to leave Toronto, but there seems to be some, you know, some tea leaves saying that he wants Queens, like Soto did. So I just think that this is a good, good situation. I guess the question is, and you don't know the answer now, you know, do you kick the tires hard now if you're the Mets? Do you go with a package today? Do you try to enter the 2025 season with Vlad, with Pete, with Soto, with Lindor, with Nimmo, with the guys you have? Or do you just kind of wait and see and maybe try to get some leverage there? Toronto's not playing
well.
Vlad's not happy. Maybe the package is lessened. How do you handle it today?
I think it's a great question. Now, the Mets have obviously more pressing needs, right? Starting rotation. So if you are going to, let's say Dylan Cease is available and the Mets want to use their prospect haul or whatever they had, you know, their assets to go get a pitcher, that's one way to do it. You probably prefer to do that than add another bat in the lineup. However, if Toronto now, see, every day that goes on, and this is what we were saying a month ago, Toronto was losing leverage. And now they have no leverage. He's on record saying, I'm hitting the open market. Not saying I'm not coming back to Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
He said, quote, they're going to have to beat the other 29 teams. Good luck to the Blue Jays doing that. And even then, and look, they might have the money, but even then, you just get the sense that
he's done.
Yeah, they weren't even close. So the Blue Jays don't have any leverage. So what exactly is going to be the draw? And then the other part of the equation is, what team is going to give the Blue Jays what they want, knowing that Vlad Guerrero Jr. is going to test free agency? They just saw what happened with Soto and the Yankees.
Yep.
Is another team outside of Steve Cohen's Mets going to be willing to do that? And by the way, I don't even know if the Mets would be willing to do that. I think they would, because they were inquiring. Now, even more so, with the price probably coming down as far as the prospects or the package back, I wouldn't say go do it right now, but if it's there at the right price, you do it and you figure out the pitching the rest, you know, another way.
Piece it together as the season goes on. I think, listen, when you look at all the teams in baseball, I think you rule out 90-something percent that would be willing to do that now, because with no assurances that he's going to resign.
Right.
You know, and this is the shadow of Steve Cohen that he's now cast throughout baseball, where you start to calculate. This is just the reality of it, guys. I think I don't know to what extent, that I don't know, but there's got to be an element of awareness that never existed, at least pertaining to the Mets, maybe back in the day with the Yankees. Well, what are the Yankees going to give Giambi in the offseason?
Yeah.
Now it's kind of like, well, how hard are the Mets going to go after Soto? How hard are the Mets going to go after Vlad Guerrero? And to that point, if you're the Pirates or the Reds or the Brewers or the A's or whomever, the Tigers, I don't know, and the White Sox, teams that might have better farm systems, that's clearly subjective.
Yeah.
But why would you give up, you know, three or four top 10 prospects when he's coming, he's leaving?
Yeah, and when you know the Mets are going to want him, not only because of the rumor that they already inquired for him, but also because, just do the math, his age, obviously the tie-in potentially with Soto, The Mets, the number one thing Steve Cohen has shown the propensity to go out there and invest in, even if he failed, was the younger star player, right? Yamamoto, that's why they went so hard after him, because it was a younger, high-end pitcher. Soto, he's not going to break the bank for everybody. Soto, you do it. Guerrero fits that mold. He's not exactly Soto, but he's going to get a lot. He's going to be 26 this year.
Yep.
Which means, all right, by the time you get him 27, but still, you got, I mean, you know, 27 years old.
Yeah, you got 5-6 years where he's going to hit 300.
And here's what I love about Vlad: more consistent than most performers, right? Like a star performer, you want consistency, and that's why Alonso, high ups and then some downs.
Yeah.
Consistent power
for the most part.
But Vlad is pretty consistent, where you know you're going to get 25 home runs minimum, and that's probably low. You're going to get 100 ribbies every year, 111, 97, 94, 103. Those are the last four seasons for him. The batting average, all right, there's been a little inconsistency there, 311, 274, 264, 323. So that has fluctuated, but still, worst case has been 264, which, I mean, come on.
It's best case for Pete, basically.
Right. That's exactly right. For a 27-year-old, I mean, I think, like you said, BT, just all the things are lining up the contract for Pete, the age of Vlad, Vlad now being going to hit free agency, Toronto not being a team that's really, I mean, I don't know what they're going to try to do this year now.
I don't know what their plan is.
Yeah.
The other thing that Vlad brings that Pete just doesn't, and this is just a feel thing, he's I don't know. Pete's coming up, and again, I do think Pete's going to have a good season. I really do. But Pete's coming up. Maybe we can nibble on the corner, sliders. You know, bust him off the plate, go low and away, get him out. He can almost get himself out sometimes. I think you see Vlad Guerrero in the on deck circle, whether he's wearing a Toronto uniform, a Mets uniform, or a Yankees or a Red Sox uniform. He terrifies you.
Come on, dude. He's just a bet.
It's a level of fear that Pete will never have.
So now here was the question that I wanted to bring up, right? We get down to it. Pete spoke yesterday, and I'm with you. I'm not going to say he's going to have a big year. I can't do that because I thought he was last year. I feel good about what I saw from Alonso, and I'm really rooting for him. Like you said, the Mets benefit if he goes nuts. They hope he does hit 50 home runs, have a monster season. Let them decide what to do with it. What do you think the Met fan feels, Pete versus Vlad? Do you think the majority of the people realize that Vlad is the better player slash far better investment?
Mm-hmm.
Or would they prefer that Pete is signed for the next 5-6 years?
I think they're emotionally conflicted, but I think their baseball sensibilities give them the only answer. And that's the guy who's playing north of the United States right now.
I disagree, actually.
Really?
I think the majority of fans,
go ahead,
wrongly so, would prefer their guy.
Well, that's why I say emotionally.
Yeah.
Meaning you think that Met fans think that Pete's better? Or that they want him more? Those are two very different things.
No, it's the same. I mean, I think that they want Pete more. It should be the same thing. Like, you would want the one
you would want the better player. Yeah, yeah.
But I believe that most Met fans want Alonso back long term because he's their guy, and they believe that Pete's going to find his form again or whatever.
Yeah,
he might, by the way.
All right, let's think about this. And by the way, these are good problems to have.
Yeah.
These are good problems to have. These are problems that generally don't present themselves to the Mets. Now it's suddenly, rather than how can we get an elite player, now it's like, well, we're juggling an abundance of options and we'll see where this goes. That's why when the Mets got Soto the next day, you know, after you went bonkers with the Cohen stuff, which was hysterical, I just sat there and I said, things change, man. And Yankee fans, at least for now, Yankee fans have to acknowledge that the game is different. And now the Mets are at a seat at the table that they've never been at. But complicating this evaluation of Pete versus Vlad, let's push this. How many home runs is he away from Darryl? What's the number again, Hoff?
27.
Thank you. Look at Hoff.
27 to win.
27 to eclipse him. Right. Got it. So once he bangs home run number 27 this year, which he will, and hopefully it's at home, think about when he's jogging around those bases. Probably be a good crowd. You know, Mets will be good this year. A lot of juice over in Queens. That conflict is going to be weighed down. Again, that's why I say their baseball sensibility tells them, there's no doubt Vlad's better. But these little moments add up. Hitting the home run against Devin Williams. Hitting a home run to pass Darryl Strawberry. Having a big season that I think that he will. So again, if you strip away the emotion, which is hard to do as a fan, it's Vladdy. But I think it's going to be a little tougher than you. The number's going to be a little more distorted than you think. They love the guy, man.
It becomes even more difficult if Pete has, to your point, a monster season this year. BT and Sal and the fan, our friends at Town Fair Tire, remind you that at Town Fair Tire, you always get the guaranteed lowest price on name brand tires from Connecticut to Maine. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. Anthony's in Manalapan. What's up, Ant?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good.
I just want to talk about defense a little bit. I know Vlad Guerrero. He's just like Soto. I mean, amazing offensive player, but his defense is severely below average. I mean, if you put him on the Mets, I mean, his defense is below Pete Alonso's. I mean, you put him on the Mets, that right side with Juan Soto and Vlad is, you know, it's poor. And then another thing is you're clogging up that DH spot because these are young guys that are already below average defenders. You know, with time, they're gonna have to find a spot for them, and you're gonna be over $1 billion on two guys that you're trying to find a spot to put them.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry about that. Thank you for the call, Anthony. First of all, he's 26 years old, be 27 next year. You can't be worse than Pete Alonso defensively. Like, he might not be as good at picking the ball. I don't think he's worse throwing the baseball.
Better arms. He's got a good, because he can play third. He's got a good arm.
That's what I'm saying. I think Alonso has done a great job working his rear end off to become a serviceable defensive first baseman. Remember, they didn't think he was going to be able to play in the big leagues. That's how bad
Dom
he
Smith,
was.
Remember, wasn't that the early?
Dom Smith was a much better fielder.
Better fielder.
And Alonso was thought to be like
unplayable at first base at the big league level. He's worked his rear end off to be a serviceable defensive player. I don't think there's going to be a significant drop-off in defense from Alonso to Vlad. Now, I admit, like, I'm not watching Vlad play defense every single game, and you only really learn. You could look at some of the defensive metrics, sure.
And I've got him for you, but it's not really. He's got an 80 percentile in the arm.
You have it in comparison to Alonso or no?
Pete's arm strength was like 20 percentile, and Vlad's right around 80. He's got a rocket compared to Pete. I think he's quick twitch. I think he's a little faster, but I think Pete's better scooper.
But you're not paying Vladimir Guerrero Jr. to play defense.
Exactly.
You get a significant upgrade offensively. And also, like, I don't know how many years he's going to get. Like, how many years you think off the top? He's not getting
I think he's getting 10.
Okay. I mean, that's a lot.
I do. I think he's getting 10.
Now, that might be, you know, 10 for what? We're talking
5?
Yeah.
What'd he turn down? 4? 380?
I'm not sure, but I don't think it was close to that.
Hoff, did you, what do you think? Was he around the neighborhood of 380? See, what was that number? Do you remember?
Vlad?
Yeah. See if you can find out what Vlad turned down from Toronto. I thought it was 3-something.
So did I. I thought it was just short of 4.
Right. So he might not. Yeah. Now, remember, it's going to be the market. It's not just the Mets going, we want you.
Correct.
It's whatever the market is, and then Cohen going over a little bit higher than whatever the market is.
Yep.
So, I mean, is it going to say 550? I don't think Vlad, this is a different animal to me than Soto. I think he might get, you know, he's going to get between 4 and 5, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is way early to be discussing this. Who the hell knows, really? We'll find out. But let's say 450, something like that. And if it is it 10 years, all right. But
45 a year.
You're not getting 15 years.
No,
the way that you got with
no
Juan
way.
Soto.
I'm with you on
There's
that.
There's not going to be that demand. Either way, it's going to be a big contract.
Yeah.
But I still think it's worth it because you're paying a guy who's going to be 27 years old. In you know, this year's going to be 26. So obviously, when he hits free agency, he'll be 27.
Well, Pete got 30 this year, okay? And Vlad's better.
Okay.
I mean, so you just start 35, 37, 38, 40
right there.
You start right there.
So say 40 for 10 years.
That's 400.
So that's why I say like 425. I think you're probably talking under 450.
What if he hits 320 this year?
Yeah.
I mean, he's done that before.
It's like
he never does it. What if he hits 320 with 36 doubles and 34 home runs and 126 RBI.
Yeah, I get it. The market, though, for first baseman. And again, a young superstar.
But the Red Sox will be in. I think the Yanks will be in. I know the Mets will be in. Like, now, right now, it's Toronto.
Right.
And Toronto is right around 4-ish. I think that thing's going to touch 5.
Mets and Yanks both could be driving that price up again. Who knows? All right, BT and Sal on the Fan. We'll continue with your calls on the other side. 888-808-1019. Alonso Guerrero, that's been the topic of conversation so far.
We started from the bottom, now we're here.
Brandon Tierney, Sal Licata back on the Fan on this Tuesday morning. 888-808-1019 is the number to call. We're talking some baseball. Pete Alonso spoke yesterday, so we liked what we saw from that. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. spoke for today. I love what I see from that. By the way, BT, we talk about it from the Mets' point of view, but obviously you mentioned the Yankees could go out there and get him as well. No guarantee just because Steve Cohen beat out the Yankees for Juan Soto that the Yankees can't go big game hunting again and go get Vlad Guerrero Jr. As well.
For sure. I also think the Red Sox are going to be very much involved in this. They're trying to spend some money. They got a situation on their hands with Devers, who does not seem like he's budging off his position. I mean, some of us thought, I didn't like it, that Stroman said, I'm not going to the bullpen. I mean, that was nothing compared to what Devers was saying yesterday. So, I don't know. Can you see a Toronto Red Sox trade? Who knows? But I do think the Yankees will be involved if they get him. I don't know. Question for you real quick here. So, what are the concerns that you had about Pete not getting a great contract?
Yeah.
Was you didn't want an unhappy Pete
right.
that could translate into production that wouldn't be good for the Mets. Where you heard him speak, where are you now?
Well, remember, that was before that Cohen flew down there to meet with Pete Alonso. So this was, I'm better than what I felt. I said I thought it would be a mistake at this point if both sides came to agreement. Like, move on. The Mets moved on. Pete apparently moved on and was going to go somewhere else. I thought it would be a mistake if they forced the issue. I don't think it's as bad as it were, or as bad as it was prior to Cohen flying down there to meet with Alonso and have that face to face and heart to heart. I mean, it was so bad that Cohen felt he needed to do that. So think about it.
Yeah.
Right? We were saying, I just felt like I needed to have the human touch and go down there and see him. So I think it's better. And I still feel like Pete, I think he's satisfied. I don't think he's happy, but I don't think it's going to be a problem the way that I felt it would have been before. I still think it's now kind of back to square one where, okay, the Mets showed they wanted him. Pete showed he wanted to be here. Obviously, he wanted to be the highest. He referenced that yesterday, too, setting the market at the $30 million. That was important to him.
Yep.
So the Mets made him happy in that regard. He gets to set the market and at least save face there. Now he's going to go out there and prove it. So I have my doubts, maybe less because of the circumstance now, which is more about it's on him to produce. Does he have it in him, another year older, to go out there and put up big boy numbers? I need to see it before I believe it, but I don't think the other stuff, I don't think his mindset is going to be a problem here.
Okay. Hoff would just tell me in our ear here, so Steve Cohen's talking right now?
Yeah, we actually have, the Mets just put it out there, so he's up and talking right now if you guys want to listen.
Yeah, of course.
Okay, yeah, you want to put that on now? Okay, let's listen to it.
Pretty exciting.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and, for shoppers, buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Can't you see it? A sparkling roadside EV quick charge power facility. It's chargers, control panels, and switchgear powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean. We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We're now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
I think the fans are going to love it.
Just seeing all your work at the culmination of that whole free agency period of wooing him. Yeah. You know, how does it kind of come together when you see him pick up that bat and step in there?
Yeah, I mean, it's always nice when a plan comes together, and the plan came together, and it's exciting to think about having him, but once you see him starting to hit in the cage and looking forward to him to playing games, and I think he's going to create a lot of excitement for the team.
It's become a running joke, the 3 to 5 year World Series thing. But
yeah.
At the Soto press conference, you said you had told him you could see the team winning 2 to 4 over the next decade. Why do you think that? Or why are you not afraid to say that out loud?
You always want to set high standards and high goals. There's no guarantee in anything, right? It's really hard to win a World Series, but the thought of you know, we're putting together a team, not just a team good for 1 year, but we want to create sustainable success. And if we keep making the playoffs, you know, why can't we find, you know, ultimate, you know, get to the ultimate goal? And so why not set a high goal and try to make it?
This is your fifth team here. How do you feel about this team compared to how you felt at other times this spring?
Yeah, listen, there are other times I felt we've had a pretty good team, and certainly coming out of 22, I thought 23 would be a great team, and it turned out to be different. So you can write it down on paper, but there's no guarantees. And so I always say we got to play the games. And you don't know about injuries, you don't know how people are going to play, but on paper we look like a really strong team with a lot of depth. And I think to get through spring training, 162 games, and playoffs, we're going to need that depth. And so I'm excited by who we have on the team. I think it's a team that is going to produce runs. I think our pitching is going to surprise people. I mean, I know there's a lot of talk about starting pitching. And the other thing is we're flexible. One thing, you know, if we have to make changes or improve the team during the year, we saw what we did in 24, and we'll do it again in 25.
So, Steve, with the learning curve that you've had as an owner since you bought the team, obviously being kind of new to the game, is this year kind of the first year that you've got almost everything where you want? In Stearns, you have the president of baseball operations you want. You're getting the star power roster that you probably always imagined. Is this kind of it really the first all come together in that way?
Well,
anything where you're at on the learning curve for that too.
Yeah, I think on paper we look really good. I think from a management point of view, we're, you know, we have a group that's going to be together for a while, and I think having that type of stability is really important, but we still have to play the games, and we still have a ways to go as far as infrastructure. I think we've moved things along a lot, but I always believe in innovating and never accepting a certain, always trying to push it further. And that's going to be the philosophy of the team. I mean, we're going to try to make all aspects of the club, the infrastructure, elite, and those are my goals, and I tend to have high goals.
What would make this year a success in your eyes?
Well, we got to make the playoffs. Okay, that's the minimum. After getting a taste of being in the league championship, we want to go to the World Series, right? And we want to win. And if we put ourselves in that position enough, maybe it doesn't happen this year, maybe it does. But if we keep putting ourselves in position in the playoffs and to make a deep run, we're going to win a World Series at some point.
Steve, you had a lot of unsung heroes last year that helped you guys get to two wins away from the World Series. Jose Iglesias was one of them. Just what are your thoughts on the situation? I mean, he's obviously not here, but you have brought a lot of back guys from last year, you know, kind of keeping the chemistry going and whatnot. So just interested to hear what you have to say.
Yeah, listen, every year there's always new players on a team, and chemistry, you know, happens. It doesn't just happen walking into spring training. It takes a while for the team to gel. And as far as individual players, I leave it to my baseball people to decide who they want on the team.
Steve, you mentioned something like infrastructure. Yeah. Can you talk about some stuff you think you still have to close the gap on? You at your introductory press conference, you talked about like the Dodgers, where it's kind of humming on all facets. What do you think you have to close the gap still on to hum on all facets?
Yeah, listen, I'm not familiar with exactly, you know, I mean, it looks like the Dodgers are humming, but hard to know from the outside looking in. I mean, I'm sure all organizations have stuff they have to work on. I think, you know, I want to be a team that can improve players. And I think we're, you know, from a pitching perspective, we've been able to do that. And I still think we're trying to figure it out from a hitting perspective. And I think you and I have had conversations in the past where everyone's working on pitching, and everybody thinks they can improve pitching. But if we can do that, then I think that would be a real leap forward. And so that would be an exciting prospect. We're always trying to improve the technology of the infrastructure and if we can find new ways to deploy technology in innovative ways, maybe using AI and machine learning in new ways, that would be kind of exciting. So there's always something to do, and you know, I leave it to the baseball people to come to me and with, you know, the type of things they want to work on.
Is there any level of frustration that you weren't able to get under that $301 million?
I mean, I wouldn't say frustrating, but I mean, it always seems like ball players are more expensive than you think. It comes back to, I think, ultimately having a farm system that is producing players, because obviously they're controllable, they're cheaper, and you need a mix. And I think we're going to get there, and I hope we get there soon. If we get there, I think that really makes it easier to kind of get to probably a more normal spending level.
BT and Sal on the fan, we're listening to Steve Cohen address the media.
The draft pick is part of the penalty, but yeah. Financial penalties or the drafting lower.
So nobody wants to spend money and pay tax, right? I mean, you know, those are expensive taxes. That is a losing draft position and or draft picks at some, you know, is an expense. You don't see it on the bottom line, but it's an expense. And both are probably not optimal as far as trying to run a team.
This year, payroll-wise, you guys are at about 325, according to some of the public estimates. How does that compare to what you thought at the end of last season?
Well, let me put it different. I mean, I've always wanted to be a little more measured in payroll growth, and then we get there, and it's never quite there. I mean, listen, I have the ability to spend if I have to. I want to win, and I want to, you know, put the best team I can on the field, and so. Getting, you know, free agency is expensive. It's just the way it is, and it's always more expensive than you can imagine.
When you say get the spending down to a more reasonable level, when you start to use the farm system in the ways that you want, what is a reasonable level?
I mean, I'd like to get below the Cohen tax. Whatever. I'm sure it's about me. I mean, there's a lot of Cohens out there. I was saying to somebody before, I'm a Piker now compared to the Dodgers.
Steve, yeah. You mentioned the Dodgers. Steinbrenner recently said that it's hard for us owners, most of us owners, to keep up with them. How do you view what the Dodgers are doing? Do you think that's what they're doing is bad for the sport?
Well, I'm not going to get into whether something's bad or good. They've built a great business over there with revenues that are significantly above almost any other team. And that gives them the ability to do things that perhaps other teams can't do. And so kudos to them. I mean, they've built a great organization.
Steve, when you take a look at the business side, your day job compared to this side, This baseball seems every year to rapidly change. Have you seen the differences in baseball since you've been here and how rapid the changes to the landscape are?
Have you ever traded markets before? They change pretty rapidly, too. So I'm actually pretty, I mean, there's a lot of similarities between being in the markets, running a hedge fund, and running a team. And a lot of it has to do that things change pretty quickly, or you have to have, you know, pretty flexible thinking. You know, how you think, what's happening, you have to be really adaptable when things are changing. And so there are a lot of similarities there, and that's, I'm kind of used to doing it.
What you think about some of the deferred money that, you know, the Dodgers and some other teams, do you see that being a trend? How do you feel about that? That doesn't seem to be how you guys are operating.
I love deferring money if I can, okay? It just so happens my players, I'm not getting lucky enough to. But you know, I think that's a little bit of a red herring, and because they're also giving big signing bonuses. And I think what's really happening there is they're trying to balance out the signing bonus with the deferral. If you notice, they tend to be in the same ballpark. And so I think people are focused on deferral and maybe not thinking about the fact that they're advancing cash at the beginning. So I'm not sure that's a real issue.
Steve, you mentioned both doing what is necessary to win and trying to lower the number below the Cohen threshold.
Right.
Does wanting to win, win again this year comes from your baseball people that they want to do?
Well,
if it means expanding your payroll further.
We're pretty up there. I mean, you know, we're at 325, and we're not including IL placements and then bringing up minor league players, and there, you know, that adds to the payroll, and then obviously we want to reserve some money for the trade deadline. And so already I can envision...
Talk to me!
If things go probably the way they're going to go, I mean, it could easily be 340, 345. That's a pretty hefty payroll.
Yeah. Yeah. How long is that sustainable for you? Like, if this doesn't go the way you want it to go, how long, how many years can you continue doing that?
I mean, it's really hard to look out into the future, hard to know. I take it a year to year. I mean, I can finance it. I mean, is that the most optimal way to run a team? Probably not.
So it's the difference between can, which isn't a question,
right,
and want to.
Well, I wrestle with that all the time. Even this year, you know, I had a thought of, like, where I want it to be, and I've already blown through it.
Yeah.
And so, and I really want it to be there. And just circumstances just created the, all right, I'm going to have to adapt my thinking.
Where was that?
And, well, I'm not going to say what it was, but I mean, it seems like when you really get to the end, I'll say it again, free agency is a lot more expensive than even you planned for that year.
Why did you ultimately decide to blow through it?
Listen, I want a winning team, and I want to put the best team I can on the field, and the way it went was, you know, it just turned out that's hard to know what pitchers you're going to sign, hard to know what position players you're going to sign, and you try to be somewhat measured, but in the end you have to make decisions, and it's just sort of the way it ends up playing out, and I still say it comes back to ultimately having a farm system that's producing players that can moderate the payroll.
Was Pete part of that initial projection, or did that kind of become an add-on?
I don't remember exactly. I mean, we always thought that Pete would be part of the team.
Okay.
And then, you know, obviously there were moments during that when we thought maybe he wasn't going to be part of the team, right? He was maybe considering going to other places. And then the question is, well, who would you replace him with? And depending if you signed him or didn't sign him, actually would have a reasonable effect on what the ultimate payroll would be.
What is the what's the state of the Willits Point project that you're trying to get done?
Yeah, moving forward, this is an important year. You know, we got to get the property rezoned, and I mean, that's a state legislature issue, and I'm hopeful that we can somehow get it rezoned. If it isn't rezoned, then obviously that would be a problem. And then once we get it rezoned, if we get it rezoned, then we have to win the license. So it's a two-step process. All of it's probably going to happen in next year, and we'll see what happens.
Will you move forward with that if you don't get the license, or is it all in or nothing?
Yeah, I think we need an economic engine to make that work. You've got to take the parking lot, build parking garages, and that's wildly expensive. You have to, and then the ground that we're building on, you need tons of pylons and that's really expensive. It's an expensive piece of property to build on, and it really needs an economic engine. And without it, it would be impossible to make any economic sense of it.
Steve, I believe at the last owners' meeting, you were put on the executive, named to the executive council.
Yes.
A big issue over the next 24 months is going to be, are the owners going for a salary cap or not? Do you think you need a salary cap?
You know, it's 2025. I mean, I'm kind of focused on 2025. A lot can happen between now and then. And as I get up to speed, I'll know more. And I'm not really worrying about it right now.
Do you think it would take away a large advantage that you currently have if that came along?
I'll compete under any circumstance. I mean, you tell me the rules and I'll compete against them. No.
What did you make of where the Mets ranked as far as attendance last year?
Yeah, I didn't like it. Okay, that really bothered me. 18th in attendance when we're right in the middle of a pennant race. I've said this before. The series against the Nationals, right before the final Philly series, I think there were 18,000 fans in the stadium during a great pennant race. And so I'm really hopeful this year. I mean, I'm told I'm that usually attendance lags performance, and so I'm really looking forward to this year being a year when the fans come out. I think the fans are having a great time. I mean, when I look out on the stadium, I think it's a great game presentation. We have a great team, I think. I'm really excited by. I think it's going to be a fun place to be this year.
Was that part of the thinking with Soto? I mean, not just that he's a great player, he's going to help the team win, but he also was a drawing card to the.
Yeah, I would call it a secondary consideration. And when you get a chance to get a generational ball player like that, they don't grow on trees. And when you actually looked at it, it might have been a while before someone of that caliber would be available again. And so that's a pretty rare opportunity, and so that's why I thought it was important to try to give the best effort we could to get him.
Well, Vlad Guerrero Jr. turned down the extension for the Blue Jays, and he'll be available next offseason.
Yeah, he's a great ball player, and once again, I'll worry about that next year. Obviously with payroll considerations, you can't have too many long-term contracts because then you lose your roster flexibility. So you got to be really careful. But I'll let my baseball people make that decision.
Steve, you mentioned that you were, disappointed in the attendance towards the end of the season. What do you attribute that to? That you're disappointed?
That people didn't show up. I mean, I can't speak for why that is, and I think it has a lot to do with generally attendance lags performance, and I think there's always been a little bit of skepticism with the Mets and believing that we're going to be sustainable winners, sustainably in the playoffs, and I think I said it in the clubhouse in a celebration. I think Met fans have had this negative perception of the Mets and their fandom. And one of my goals is to break that negativity and have them believe that we're going to be a sustainable winner year in and year out, and they come to the ballpark and enjoy it.
Given the offseason you just had, have you seen ticket sales increase compared to maybe what they were the last few years at this time of year?
I missed that. What was that?
Given the offseason that you guys just had, have you seen an increase in ticket sales compared
yes, we have.
To maybe what was the last few years?
We've seen a decent, significant percentage increase. That's really encouraging. It's what I was hoping for. And frankly, you want a full stadium because, you want a lot of noise there and you want the opposing teams to really feel it when, they're playing us. And so it's important that the fans come out and support the team.
Steve, you seem to have a lot of fun personally with last year's run.
Yes.
Getting as far as you guys did. Whenever you start thinking about the business sense of what you're doing, does that pop in your head and like, you know what? I'm going to go beyond what I thought the financial limits were because I want that feeling again for me. I want it for the team. Does that still sit in the back of your mind?
When you go through what that playoff run and to make the playoffs. I mean, how much fun was that? I mean, that month was one of the most. I hadn't felt anything like that in I don't know if I ever felt anything of that type of emotion that was like on almost a daily basis. And so when you get that feeling, you want more of that. And that's really what you're playing for, the opportunity to get into the World Series and playoff baseball is so much fun. I mean, it rises to another level. I mean, they're all playing hard during the year, but everyone takes it up a notch, and that's a lot of fun.
For as fun as that was, could you imagine what winning a World Series would be like?
Listen, that's the goal, right? I mean, just those celebrations when you're amongst the players and the joy that they have in moving along and succeeding, going to the next round, and that's what they're playing for, and be a part of that is a unique experience.
You mentioned that feeling during October. Is there a moment this winter where the buzz wore off for you a little bit after you guys were eliminated?
When I developed a frozen shoulder. I'm in pain every freaking night. That takes the buzz off pretty quick.
Was there any sort of like...
But actually, the way I would describe it is when it gets into the dead of winter, and you're not playing baseball and you've just gone through something like that, you're like, you can't wait till the season starts again.
How eager were you to get the season off again?
Yeah, I'm excited. I mean, come on. There's nothing better than coming to spring training and you have all the hope that this year is going to be a great year, and you know, you haven't lost a game yet, so I mean, you can hope, right? And I think there's more than hope here. I think we've built a pretty strong team.
Thank you, Steve.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Thank you.
Thanks,
all right.
Okay, so there you go, Met fans. First of all, you got to love everything that you heard there. You know, we play a lot of press conferences. We do a lot. We, you know, whether it's the Yankee contingent, obviously the Knicks don't speak a whole lot, but you hear from the general managers for football. And after a while, and this is not to disparage them, a lot of good people in this town, they get boring, though. They get a little repetitive. Mm-hmm. They don't really say a whole lot. The thing about Cohen is that, you know, he strikes this incredible balance of remaining conversational and interesting. He's never too intense. He's never aloof. It's just like you'd listen to him, and you really feel like you get an honest, true read on what's in his heart, which, Met fans, you have to love what you just heard.
If you just sat there and listened to that like we did, I think you could only come to one conclusion. It was spoken like a king! Just roll with me, BT. I want to win. Cohen tax be damned. Payroll be damned. I want good players. And to win, you need great players. Spoken, BT. Like a king. Thank you, King Cohen.
You know, I hit you with that. That's great. He was good. He was really good. He is a very likable guy. He really is. I mean, generally when... Oh, man. That I'll give you that. That was kingly. That was a kingly performance right there. He rolls in. Yeah, we got Soto. Yeah, we'll see about Vlad. Yeah, whatever. Cohen tax. Like, he's talking about his own tax. He's so humble. It's really, I just to reassert what I said, his balance is impressive because you know he's a shark. Like, he is a cutthroat shark in the boardroom, but he projects in a way that the common man relates to, which is a very affable trait. I like Steve Cohen.
And you know what I love about him, too? That you could tell he's learned. We had this conversation when we first got together that summer, whatever it was. I guess 2 summers ago now, almost?
Yeah.
Okay, so remember I came out with the paper bag over my head? That was the Verlander Scherzer thing.
Yeah.
But it was at that point, that to me was the key point in this whole process, because he learned the mistakes of investing in older pitchers and how much, and also pivoted immediately instead of just doubling down or trying to wait for it to play out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Epler was here at the time, so different GM, but they were forward-thinking, paying those guys to go away, buying some prospects, in the process saving some money, and then reinvesting that in younger, obviously Soto now, or better spots, even with the pitching, like 2-year deals for pitchers that aren't as proven, but, you know, talking about 10 years younger than the Verlander and Scherzer type ages that they had before. So he's learned as he's gone along here, also learning that you can't just go out there and buy. Like, things happen. Mm-hmm. Stuff happens. You need to have depth. So I do think, and I think it was Dave Lennon who asked the question about, is he at the best spot he's in his ownership so far going into year 5, learning all that. I do think that's the case with what he's learned, who he's hired now with Stearns and Mendy in place, bringing in the stars. Lindor's here, Soto here now. I do think the Mets are in the best spot that they've been in, and this truly should be the beginning of the sustained success that the organization has been searching for since 1962.
They're certainly sitting on the tarmac in a nice plane. You know, now you've just got to get the altitude that you guys crave, and a lot of signs say that you probably will. And by the way, you left something out. You know, the infrastructure, and he talks about that, whether it's the digital stuff, the analytics stuff. Like, you know, I know Port St. Lucie, there's far worse minor league facilities. But when he got there, well, I don't know that it was top-notch.
It wasn't.
You know, the Mets were lagging behind in a lot of things. They were kind of getting lapped. It was a very antiquated way of constructing a baseball team and trying to maximize players' talent. So when you say, and I do agree that, and again, now you need the results, but you you think that the Mets are the best place since he's taken over, I agree, because the things that, and it's not that dissimilar from Patino. Like, the, you think about the erosion of St. John's and the erosion of the Mets, like these things that you have to do that the Dodger and the Yankee fan and maybe the Astros now and maybe the Padres, like you kind of take for granted. He had to fix basic things.
Right.
Before we could even get to this point, but here we are.
Built the infrastructure. And it takes a while. I mean, I remember being down there in spring training a couple of years ago where they were talking about how much he's invested in it, but it takes years to pan out. And by the way, we might see it this year with some of the young pitching. We talked about it yesterday, the Mets, and we could get further into this as we go on here, but without Montas now, how do they replace him? Maybe a guy like Sproat comes up through the system, and eventually, if it's not him, somebody else. Because they're building the infrastructure that should set them up for years to come. All right, BT and Sal.
By the way, Sal, real quick, the Mets social media, courtesy of them, so we appreciate that with the Cohen stuff. But he talked for a while. I'll tell you, you got to get Cohen on the show. I know you've been trying. It's not a lack of effort.
Well,
we got to get him on the
years,
show.
I've kind of, I talked to Mrs. Cohen.
I understand. I know. I know. For all you do with the king stuff, I mean, Steve, come on, man.
You would think.
Let's go.
The king would acknowledge his peasants, his mere peasants, who bow down to his every word. But anyway, we'll work on it.
There you go. All right.
And when he comes on, you know what we'd have to do.
Well, beat him up in baseball cards, right?
No, take him down.
No. That's where I got to get some blood from him. What do we have to do?
We got to play the music.
Yeah, no, of course. Listen, dude, it's part of the deal, man. Just remember, that crown. Ain't light.
BT and Sal on the Fan Warrior calls. We come back 888-808-1019.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.